Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator. This is the Limark Technical Net. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we come together and we chat with each other and we educate each other. We learn from each other and hopefully we entertain each other. This particular technical net has been going on for 44-plus years, mostly under the care of Dick, K2RIW. Dick has become a silent key, and so I took over this job. So I thank you all for coming again this Sunday night when we try and do this all over again. Let me drop for a moment, and I will tell you what we got planned. Okay, it's going to be a generic vanilla version. There's no guest speakers or anything. There's a little bit of news in the AI world. Apple Electronics, you know them. They bring you your iPhones and such. They released a research paper on generative artificial intelligence where they suggested that there is probably a wall, that it's not going to become a super genius and take over the world, but that generative technology embedded in the present types of artificial intelligence have inherent limitations that we haven't reached yet, but they think that we will. So we may not have artificial intelligence overlords in the next few years, no matter what Sam of OpenAI tells everyone. Anyway, we're going to have the usual questions, comments, topics tonight. I'll ask people to submit hopefully some amateur radio subjects, but we'll discuss any science and or technology. We'll ask people to hit the push to talk and give me their first name, their call sign, what's the nature of the question, whether it's amateur radio or technology or science or what have you. Again, it would be nice if everyone came on time and put their name down, because what inevitably happens, and what happened last week, is a gentleman decided around 9:30 that he would like to talk, and everyone had already put their name down, and so they weren't able to. So once again, it's always a nice idea, show up around 8 o'clock and just put your name down and just make sure that you got a place in the line. It's not too difficult. That will be the first segment. Hopefully that will go to approximately 10:15. And then we will turn to Paul, WS2N, with the SpaceNet report. And that should take approximately to 11 p.m. And I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So hopefully, if the laws of physics continue to work the way they're supposed to, and my shack doesn't break, and the repeater doesn't break, and don't get kicked off of All-Star too many times, that's the plan for tonight. So wish us all good luck. And if anyone has any questions or comments or topics for tonight, please hit that push to talk and give me your first name, your call sign, and what is the nature of the topic. And we'll get this show going.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf.
Okay, Wesley recognized and Sam recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down for tonight? Okay, probably later on in the night more people will show up and have some questions and want to be put on the list. We'll see. Sam, you got a question tonight or are you just checking in?
I have a question tonight, but I can wait a few minutes so that you get your forces in order.
Okay. Wes, do you mind if we take Sam first?
Of course. No problem at all.
Okie doke. Well, Sam, what's your question for tonight?
Okay. My question tonight involves vertical antennas and noise levels. Do vertical antennas have higher noise levels than other types of antennas? And maybe you can explain the use of a common mode noise filter. That's my question for the evening.
Okay. On a theoretical basis, most people, if you kind of ask, will tell you that vertically polarized antennas tend to have are a bit more noisy than horizontally oriented antennas. The reasons why, though, are not really written in stone at this point. There are a bunch of theories that make some sense, and so people repeat them to each other, and it just continues. Now, antennas, and so since they can kind of sweep 360-degree signal, they can also sweep 360 degrees of noise. So that's one of the reasons some people will tell you that verticals are noisier than horizontal. Somewhat more technical, the orientation of any signal either you know, produces a certain amount of attenuation. If you have a vertical antenna and your friend, the next town over has a horizontal antenna, you're probably not going to get as good of a signal as if both of you had either a horizontal or both of you had a vertical. So the fact that reason that their vertical antenna is a little bit less noisy to them in their location under their circumstances. So it's not a 100% thing, but it tends to be very common that people find their vertical antennas to be more problematic with background noise. The noise level on their verticals have a higher estimate. Your question has a few more parts to it. So to answer the vertical noise, vertical oriented antenna noise question.
Very well, thank you. So now we're talking about the solution to the problem and the question about using a common mode noise filter.
Great answer, but when you have nothing that's particularly good, then you're better off with even something that kind of half works. Common mode, we've talked about this many, many times before. There's two types of current going through your transmission line. There's a differential mode, which is the good stuff. It's the signal that you're sending to the antenna. Two conductors, 180 degrees out of phase with each other. They're shielded, and they stay isolated in your transmission line and don't radiate away. Problem with that is if you don't have a perfect antenna, when it gets up to the antenna feed point, there's going to be some degree of reflection. The reflection is going to be partially common mode. Common mode is different than differential in that in differential mode, the current runs on the inner aspect of the shield and the center wire. Common mode runs on the inner aspect of the shield and the outer aspect of the shield. For the sake of RF energy and skin effect, you can have one conductor operate as two separate conductors, the inner aspect and the outer aspect, because in RF frequencies, current can run on a thin layer on the skin. We call that the skin effect. So the problem is that sometimes common mode currents get into your coax. Common mode can radiate out. So if you have common mode bouncing back from your antenna, it can act as its own antenna. It no longer isolates in the coax cable, and it radiates, and you get RF noise and garbage, and your garage door open closes, and your computer hiccups. And that's the primary use for a choke. A choke is just a glorified way of saying an inductor. By winding your outer shield around a toroid, a ferrite toroid, you're increasing the impedance of that portion of your coax. And for common mode, that impedance will act to impede common mode current. It won't affect differential mode because differential mode works differently and the impedance is kind of negated. So It's primarily to block common mode reflections from a slight mismatch in your antenna. But in addition, to a degree, sometimes general RF can leak around the edges and produce common mode currents that are introduced as part of your signal to your radio's front end. The RF chip will eliminate those that are in common mode. If your RF noise is in differential mode, as it is when it comes off of the antenna, because the background noise is simply part of that spectrum of the frequency that you're picking up on your antenna, then the RF choke is not going to help at all. But it helps a little bit with specific types of RFI, radio frequency interference. But the primary reason most of us use RF chokes is to limit the amount of common mode reflections that otherwise radiate into our shacks and cause the endless problems. So I hope that is.
That was a very thorough discussion of it. Bottom line is, will it help reduce the noise of vertical antenna?
Yes, but not a lot. You got to kind of snap an RF choke on your system and say, my God, my noise floor dropped from an S5 to an S2.5. It's going to be subtle at best.
Thank you very much, Roy, and I'll be listening. Thank you very much, and have a good evening. I'll be listening and standing by. Thank you.
Okay, very good, Sam. Thank you for participating. I do appreciate it. Anyone else out there come to the radio late and want to put their name down, please hit that push to talk.
Fold, this is. No Charlie 2, Delta Alpha listening, Whiskey listening.
Okay, that's good. Anyone else, anyone with a question or a comment or a topic for discussion tonight? Because this is the best time to get your foot in the door. I once again urge people not to wait until 9:30 and then be disappointed. So if there's anyone out there who thinks they might have a question or a topic for discussion, please feel free.
November 2, Yankee Bravo Sierra, just checking in for tonight.
Okay, very good. Let me ask you guys a question. Someone in the chat room suggested that my audio is choppy. The comment is, Roy sounds choppy as if the All-Star connection is about to drop. Can I get someone give me a quick little signal report?
Your signal is perfect, KD2VHD.
Yeah, Jim?
Choppy, Roy. Nothing that's a problem, but I would say that's accurate, but completely workable.
It's not smooth. It's raspy and 2MEX.
Okay. Well, what can I tell you? I didn't change anything different. It might be some aspect of the All-Star link over at the repeater. As long as you guys can at least understand me, that's better than, unfortunately, the repeater is not really designed to get people in Brooklyn, where I live, right next to Coney Island. So, there was a time where I was very, very, very noisy, unfortunately. So this seems to be a better approach. So I hope people will allow the lack of perfect quality. Maybe someday Limark will get a repeater up in Brooklyn or close to the Brooklyn-Queens border, and I'll be able to go on RF. Anyway, once again, anyone else out there? Let me try as a little experiment. Sometimes the connections are what's causing it, so I'll disconnect and I'll reconnect. Okay, I tried a couple little things that I could do on my end. So is about the most that I can kind of do. I also drop the CPU cycles on my desktop so that if something is interfering with it, it'll be a little bit better. So is it any different, or is it just the same?
Just the same, N2MEX, and it's not inferior, so don't worry about it.
Okay, very good. Say again? Okay, once again, if anyone has a question or a topic or a comment and they want to get on the list, feel free. Hit that push to talk and ID yourself.
KD2HD, KD2VHD, it's not a question.
Oh, okay, Jim. Wes, do you mind if I take Jim first?
No, not at all. Please take him.
Okie dokie, Jim, what you got?
So the topic is ground plane antennas. And as I learn about them, there's lots of different, you know, rules and laws and edicts about the length of the radials. And there's all sorts of, you know, perfect people deciding exactly how they should be, but it seems like they should be. So I guess the question is, how important is the length of the radials, or is there some fudge factor there? Or is there anything else to add on the topic to generalize it? Because it seems like there's a lot of people with very rigid opinions, but they're all different. Back to that.
AC2GS, you are absolutely right, Jim. Matter of fact, I have discussed this many times with TechNet's own Rich, W2BZ. He saw a YouTube, and the YouTube said it must be a quarter of a wavelength, and because he's a good YouTube guy, he thought it would have to be a quarter of a wavelength. It is a very soft subject, and although a quarter of a wavelength is the most common response, if you ask anyone who has an opinion, there are people who say a third, there are people who say a sixth, there are people who say a half. So it's not written in stone. Theoretically, probably the best approach is to start off trying things like a quarter wavelength and change it as your whim requires and see if the functionality improves. It will shift slightly the impedance, so, you know, you might end up with a better antenna in your area by making the counterpoise radials a little bit longer or a little bit shorter. There's a parallel argument among people who put together vertical ground plane antennas that if you want to have any chance of having different bands operating on the same vertical, you must cut your radials to multiple different lengths. So instead of just kind of putting up three or four quarter wave radials, they suggest staggering it with different lengths to see what you could get away with and experimenting with that. And, of course, we've mentioned this before, but it's always good to mention it again. The number of radials is a hot discussion also. If you place it on the ground, you cannot, you shouldn't really put three or four radial wires out, because the radials serve two purposes in the case of a ground-mounted ground plane vertical. In addition to offering a counterpoise for the balance of the radiating antenna, it also shields your antenna from the ground and limits the amount of coupling to the ground and power being dissipated into the ground rather than being radiated as electromagnetic waves. So when it's down on the ground, the best story I heard is at least 36 radial antennas will shield the ground and decouple it so that you'll have much more efficient use of your energy in radiating above the ground than being absorbed by the ground and warming up little worms. When you raise it up, a degree, it doesn't have to be up in the sky, but it has to be some significant fraction of a wavelength. Then you have less worries about the ground coupling, and you can get away, as many people do. If you ever look up at all these UHF and VHF antennas, they usually just have three little short stubby radials, and that gets it the job done. So I hope I answered the question. If not, tell me what I didn't answer.
You're definitely expanding my thought pattern on the whole thing. So the parallel to this is a mobile antenna on a car. If you're going to adjust it for SWR or impedance, you're going to adjust the radiating element and not the bumpers. Is there any... I know you don't like my mechanical analogies, but sorry, there it is. Anything in that analogy to what we're talking about?
Well, when it comes to mobile, you're much more limited in your ability to modify the grounding system. You basically, for the most part, you're coupling it to the chassis of your car, and your car is your car. The only thing you could really significantly change is where you place the mobile antenna determines a slight degree of directionality. In other words, if you mount your antenna on the rear bumper of your car, say, you ground it to your chassis in that way, the directionality is towards the front of your car. If you put the antenna and couple it to the chassis on your cab, on the place that you sit above it, then it will be a kind of more omnidirectional antenna. And obviously, if you plant it on the front of your car, then its directionality is towards the rear. But you can't really change the amount of metal, once you've kind of decided to couple it to your chassis. Whereas in most radials, you can adjust the directionality and the length and the amount of metal that you're using very easily.
So that speaks pretty highly to the directionality, but what about the impedance and the, I guess the word is resonance. I know they're different, but like I said, it's unlikely that you'll trim the bumpers to increase or decrease the SWR, so you do the radiator. Would that same principle be relevant or irrelevant to a ground plane antenna where you can clip either one with the same ease?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, if you could shift from one type of a car to another type of a car, you'll have slightly different characteristics. But short of that, there's really nothing you can do. You can't really disconnect part of your chassis from your counterpoise system. So the only thing that you could really do is adjust the coupling. Some mounts are just metal to metal. So there's no adjusting that. You just have to make sure that the base makes contact with the metallic portion below the paint of your vehicle. In the case of magnetic mounts, though, those are not directly electrically connected to the ground. They're coupled capacitively. So theoretically, you could change the capacitance in that coupling and modify the effect, although that would probably be a real pain in the backside because it's built into the design of magnetic mounts. So there's no magnetic mount I'm aware of that has interchangeable built-in capacitors where you could just adjust that. So it's more of a theoretical thing. Unfortunately, with mobile, you have the counterpoise that your car gives you.
Understood. Thank you for exploring it. Unless somebody else wanted to throw something in, I'm clear.
Okay. If anyone has any comments, feel free. Okay, Okay, I guess no one has any comments. Well, thank you, Jim. Thank you for participating. I appreciate it. Anyone else with any questions or comments for tonight, please hit that push to talk and ID yourself. Okay, perhaps later on someone will have a question or a comment. Wesley, what do you got for us tonight?
I have a question first. Am I coming more comfortable on EchoLink, or am I coming more comfortable on radio?
I like the audio on the EchoLink. Your amplitude is stronger, and you have a little bit more bass. The radio kind of cuts off some of the bass.
Okay. So the first object open on Spot 4 Pro. So we have something that is advertised, and some people were very good fans of it. It's battery-powered, portable standalone digital radio internet gateway, hotspot designed mainly for amateur use. And they say that you could have a Shark RF link up, D-Star, DMR, C4FM, NX, DN. So you have everything that you wish to have. But there is a difference of opinions, and Dr. Roy, please, would you mind to express your opinion?
Well, you might have everything that you need, but unfortunately, in my experience, you don't have technical support. Now, I used to be a big fan of OpenSpot. Actually, Shark RF is the company. The product is called OpenSpot. I was a big fan of Shark RF. I bought some OpenSpot 2s. I bought an OpenSpot 3. They were very nice. Once upon a time, it's a plastic shell that covers it. So the plastic front shell popped off one day and lodged itself behind my big heavy desk. And I tend to be somewhat lazy. So I emailed them and I told them, and they said no problem. They'd mail me another plastic shell. Yeah, I mean, it must cost them about 50 cents. But still, it's very nice. A lot of other companies would either not respond, or if they did respond, they would want proof that I owned it. Or if not proof, they would charge me something, the postage at the very least. But they were very nice, and I appreciated that, and that's why I went from one OpenSpot 2 to another OpenSpot 2 to an OpenSpot 3. Then, later on, for whatever reasons, Wi-Fi is a very strange type of mode. We're already at Wi-Fi 7. We were at 6E, then it was 6. But a lot of old Wi-Fi chips can't seem to tolerate newer versions of access points. And that seemed to have been the case of OpenSpot. I discovered that when I upgraded to Amazon sells this mesh router called Aero, E-E-R-O. And I used to have an Aero 6, and now I have an Aero 7. And Aero 7 didn't agree with my OpenSpot. They just would not pair with each other. No matter what I did, I tried to set it back to an older standard, which is a method that Aero uses sometimes when you have difficulty pairing. Couldn't get it to pair. I asked the Shark RF. They sent me basically a boilerplate. You know, this is the same response that they sent probably everyone. So, unfortunately, the boilerplate didn't help me, and I couldn't get it to pair. And after the boilerplate, they followed up by ghosting me. Ghosting, if people are unfamiliar with the concept, is where one person electronically stops responding to the other person. You know, you send them an email, and they send you nothing. You send them another email, and they send you nothing. And so that's what happened to me in Shark RF. And finally, I found myself with about $500 worth of very light and ineffectual paperweights because I couldn't use it for anything else, and I had to buy another hotspot. So basically, they had been kind of inactive for about 2-3 years. There was a big gap between the open spot 3 and the open spot 4. So I think there was a problem in the company when I had my problem. But nevertheless, you screw me, and basically you're dead. So they're dead to me. I moved on to another hotspot that I'm quite happy with, and I wouldn't suggest anyone buy anything from Shark. RF, because, you know, if they went silent once, they can get silent again. And, you know, for hundreds of dollars for these little units, you need someone who will actually respond to you.
Okay. Thank you very much for your comment. We're going to keep in mind, and definitely it is helpful to have radio communique. Did you express yourself in this area, especially when you have a great experience with the product? And June 19, 2025, at 4:23 in Queens, we had extremely intense rapid rain and thunderstorm, and it lasts about 30 minutes. So many trees went down as well. Of course, it was interesting to watch how the tree is breaking up just for the weight of the water that didn't have a chance to go down. Okay. And then I look at the computer and I found something that is interesting from the physics standpoint. We know that lightning, before the lightning, is the difference of potentials, and we have electric potential between the ground and the cloud or whatever is up there, because the cloud is not uniform. And all of a sudden I'm reading that a teenager, 15 years old teenager, was playing in Central Park, and about 3:45 p.m. he was struck by the lightning, but he wasn't. His chain around the neck, really looking at the chain from the perspective of electric circuit, it's a coil, it's a closed coil, but it's a coil. And some of that, the lightning strike and the chain are around the neck of the teenager create a burn. So, of course, it would be interesting if Dr. Boy explained it better. Because we're talking about static electricity, it's DC, not AC. So there is no induction. But of course, he's going to do a good job. Dr. Roy.
Well, I don't think it's quite static electricity. It's ionized gases and such. So, I mean, something with an enormous amount of electrical potential strikes the conductor, and it turns it into local heat, which causes local burns. I think if it was a straight piece of wire that the guy just had looped around, not even looped around it, but U around him, you know, U-shape, it would probably, he was just very unlucky. You know, usually you look for something that offers a better path to ground, and something like a necklace doesn't really offer that much. You know, you're not that far off the ground to begin with, so it's not like it's high in the sky. So, you know, I guess theoretically he wasn't around anything with trees or anything. It was his unlucky day. So, I mean, it's just a simple concept of any kind of arcing ion trail that happens to find you as an interesting path to its ground will kind of wreak havoc with you.
Okay, interesting. Well, I see it a little bit different. You have a closed loop. So you have an electric circuit, you have a coil, but the coil is closed loop. And then the DC between the cloud and the ground and the surface of the earth changes to the AC. Because many times we have a lightning, we have AC. AC has the ability to induce the voltage in anything. So we recall Tesla transformer, there was two coils, and the ratio between the coils created the voltage difference. So if you had 1 volt at one wind of the Tesla coil primary and 1,000 winds at the secondary, you had 1,000 volts of potentials. Of course, we're not talking about the current. So now we have something that is AC and is inducing in the chain about this black teenager the neck a current, a voltage and a current. And that's why he was taken to the local medical center for the treatment, and NYPD was involved in it. That was Whale Cornell Medical Center. But to you.
Okay, I would tend to disagree. And we've gone through this before. It's not really alternate current, because the lightning isn't going from positive to negative to positive to negative. It's transient. The voltage potential is changing amplitude but remaining the same polarity. So it's not alternating, but it is transient.
That is correct. It is varying in time. You're absolutely right, Patrice.
Yeah, and I don't think a necklace is a great thing to capture electromagnetic energy. It's close to the ground to begin with. It's small in circumference. Again, I think if this person unfortunately was wearing something where it had a broken connection, where it wasn't solid conductor from one end to the other end, you would probably have a very similar same situation. So I don't think it was a loop antenna in action. Because, again, loop antenna with a diameter of what? Maybe 12 inches? I mean, that would be resonant at a very high frequency. So I don't think that's what's going on, personally. But I wasn't there, so I can't tell you.
Okay, so we have an incident that is worth to be remembered. Some people may go deeper into the subject and study it, and some people may just remember. The coupling between the two windings is based on the distance, so inverse square law, in near field. So we may say that the voltage that caused the induction in the closed coil was probably at enormous value, and the current was probably humongously big, but it happened. So it didn't happen, we didn't know about it, but at least it gives us information that it is not always safe to have something around the neck that is heavy enough to become extremely hot. Back to you.
Okay, I don't think it's the mass that really makes any difference. And a lot of times you'll hear these reports of currents being induced into electrical utility lines, burning out all kinds of interesting electrical equipment. So it doesn't have to be a loop. It could be just a length of wire. John KD2BD from New Jersey in the chat room wrote, the lightning strike caused a brief, rapidly changing magnetic field that induced a high instantaneous current. The nearby electrical loop causing it to get very hot very quickly. So, yeah, I mean, the magnetic field induces a voltage potential difference, and that dissipates as heat, and so you get a burn. But again, I don't think it was highly dependent upon the characteristics of the necklace. I think if you're in the wrong place, a straight piece of wire is going to induce a lot of voltage potential and current that can blow out secondary systems that have nothing particularly to do with stuff that has antennas connected to it. I've heard more than a few hams argue the fact of that, you know, they go to the trouble of grounding their antenna systems and they find that their television set blows up because of just an induced current from a local lightning strike.
And to each, yeah. Well, when I was talking about the mass of the conductor, I was talking about the simple fact that if you have a 28-gauge wire and you put enough current for it to become hot, it burns faster. And then the person who has it around the neck, yes, he's got the burn, but it's no more danger. When you have a heavy chain, gold chain, it's a conductor, and you deliver enough of current by means of induction, that may be really creating extremely big burns. Thank you very much for that, and let me go to the next one. The new approach to cell. So we have Alpha. Alpha is pretty much known, and they make antennas. So they have VHF, UHF antenna for $199. They have MIL, EMCOM Deluxe, MFJ, and it's $500 before the tax. They have HF, VHF, UHF, MEX, Tenna for $350, and something that looks like Angered HF, VHF, Yagi, and they call it Yagi Deluxe. So imagine that you have a Yagi, but it's more V with two V elements, and they want $800 for it. Alpha also has the HF, UHF, UHF, Hex, Tenna, Deluxe, $600, and HF Base HD antenna, which is nothing more but vertical dipole. Well, you told me why do I call it dipole. Vertical antenna, then that one is $750. So, okay. So, I was looking at a video, and the video title is Ham Radio Just Got a Game Changer with New Portable Antennas. I look at a gentleman from Alpha who holds something like an antenna, like a portable line, short at the end of it, with ability to adjust the wavelength of that sort of loop, maybe Dr. Roy will look at the picture that I have sent him and describe it better. And, well, she says it was 1.8 megahertz to 2.8 gigahertz, if I remember correctly. Okay. So, it's not about the antenna, it's about what he says. The guy, our DARPA guy. Then he shows another antenna, which is a loop antenna, and he says, well, this loop antenna is 1.8 to 1 gigahertz. So 1.8 megahertz to 1.8, and it's a new loop for military. Then, of course, the first antenna was... Oh, I'm sorry. I got a mistake. The first antenna that looks like you have a saxophone. If you have a saxophone, you have something to adjust the length with your hand, right? So that looks like a sort of two pearl wires shorted at the end, right? And it says 1.8 to 440 megahertz. Okay, and it's also for military. And then you have something that he offers, which is 45 degrees one element and 45 degrees second element, and that's what he calls Yagi. Right. So what issue do I have with that? Well, it's like... If you're selling it for military, what the heck are you doing on a hampers? Sell it to military. And then you're telling me that you have a suggested price. You invented 3 years ago a suggested price, and now you're doing very well with that suggested price. So for me, it looks like there is enough of sales on commercial antennas for commercial price, and manufacturers do not want to lose the ham radio market, the range of the commercial product. Just to wait for your comment.
Well, yeah, I don't take the offense that you apparently do. It's a marketing ploy. It's kind of, give me a price. You know, it kind of goes back to the good old days where, you know, and a lot of other countries regularly don't intend to sell things at the price that they're asking. They intend to squabble over the damn thing. I mean, I went years and years ago, I went down to Mexico, and this is all that they did. Everyone was your best friend, even though you'd never met him before, and he was going to give you a deal better than he'd give his mother. And, you know, you went back and forth if you were into that, and some people take great pride in it. So it's kind of a callback to that. It doesn't really translate to anything outside of a ham fest, as far as I'm aware. I mean, the website... For the company says that you can email them a suggested price and they'll tell you whether it's acceptable to them or not. But if you look up DX Engineering, they give you a list price. So I don't know what that amounts to. Alpha is kind of known as a military spec, a military antenna. They do. My understanding is they do sell a lot of antennas to the military. They thought they'd pick up some loose change off of hams, and a lot of hams respect military spec equipment, so, they have a good reputation as far as I'm aware. You could sell in two markets. I mean, my Flex Radio, probably if they didn't have government contracts, they'd be out of business, because I don't think there would be enough amateur radio operators to support that company. But, you know, that's the nature of things. Most companies that survive in amateur radio are very, very frequently a bigger company that just has a little branch that deals with us because they don't make that much of a profit off of hams. We tend to be a little bit on the tight side with our wallets and such. So yeah, I have nothing against it. If that's what lets them get through, the financial year at a profit instead of a loss and keeps them around, so be it.
Okay. And to XGM. Well, Making money on the antenna is not as bad as you say it is. It is like we have a company that has CNC milling and machines and a lathe. And it happened with it's one gentleman. It's a one worker job. But he was able to automize. I mean, it's like in the small business, your head doesn't cost you. Whether you're sitting in front of the computers and using them for the mouth, or you using them for the CNC machine, it doesn't cost you. You bought it, you have it. Especially when you got it from your father, like Mr. Trump did. Okay, but we're talking about money. So, for very small companies, if you make something and you sell it for a few dollars less than competition, that's okay. You still make something more than zero. And it's not that difficult to survive. We're talking about the whole entire world. It's just a matter of advertising. And, of course, the name. Mike, back to you and to you.
Did you turn it over to me? Because you cut out right before you possibly did.
Yes, I did. So I want to add some things. The reason why companies having a proper machining and space do not do antennas is because they don't know this. They simply do not understand ham radio or whatever. Or even if they wanted to become military contractors, they don't know how to get there. But if it happened that it is a ham radio operator who has a machining shop, that would be quite a different story. There is still money there. Mike, back to you.
Well, I mean, there might be, but not necessarily, because things cost something. You don't fabricate antennas out of nothingness. You need the materials, you need the tools, then you need to either advertise it or you know, just pray to the god of your choice, because you might have a wonderful, cost-effective antenna that no one knows about and no one buys, and you have a bunch of them sitting in the back of your garage gathering dust. And those things cost you money to produce and to package, and if you did advertising, and if you don't get back your return, you lose money. Businesses lose money all the time. Most businesses, more than 50% of businesses go out of business in a matter of a couple of years. You know, different types of businesses have much more different fail rates. But again, with amateur radio operators, if you don't have some kind of a gimmick, or if you're not already well known, it could be a tough slide. You know, people kind of look at an antenna that, you know, to them, you could go to Home Depot, get some wire, get some plastic, and put something together. And here's this guy who wants you to send $450 in the mail. And again, hams usually are kind of tied with that. So, I've never talked to a guy involved in amateur radio business who ever told me that he was making out like a bandit. They all kind of complain that their margins are very, very tight, and it's more of a labor of love that then greed fueling their motivation.
Intuition. Well, there's nothing wrong with trying to make some buck. Nothing wrong with that. Usually, machine shops, they do whatever they do. And in addition to that, they do this and they do that. And if they were to know how to make an antenna, not really something new and not really something special, but something better. That means you have the same antenna, but better American workmanship for less, because you do not have to pay the payroll to your employees. You're just one guy in your shop. then definitely there will still be some guy who wants to pay the money for it. As far as the material, it's not that critical. It's, of course, a headache to go around and look where you can get something inexpensive, and there are junkyards and whatsoever, and there is a plenty of materials in different places that you don't have to pay the price, like, from the supply house. But anyhow, thank you very much, Dr. Roy, for that comment. End of lithium. Okay. End of lithium. Elon Musk announced 2025 Tesla super aluminum ion battery for the masses. So, in April 2015, researchers from Stanford, and there was a professor, Honey Dai, claimed to have developed aluminum ion battery with richer recharge time about 1 minute for an unspecified battery capacity. The cell provides about 2 volts and 4 volts and is connected to series, whatever. But the prototype type lasts 7,500 charge discharges, charges and discharges. So, now we have the battery that has density potential for, I mean, we're talking about aluminum ion batteries, 1,060 watts per kilogram in comparison with lithium, which is 406 watts per kilogram. So compare those. We have a 1,060 watts per kilogram, and then we have a 406 watts per kilogram for traditional lithium ion. And this battery, it could be charged many times more. So, with different sources, we have different information saying that you could have, let me jump. Talking about a battery of, battery of Tesla. If you had a new type of battery, you are avoiding that $20,000 expense for the new battery, for the replacement of the battery, for about 30 years. That means normally after 10 years you need to change that battery. Of course, depends from how much you're driving. Now, once per 10 years you can do it. And that would be something that is revolutionary. But of course, Dr. Roy has different opinion. Dr. Roy, please.
This is a research project at this point, as far as I'm aware, and I'm very dubious of the 1 minute recharge cycle. You don't know what the capacity that it recharged to. Could be a micro amp hour. Watt hour. Things like this are just meant to promote investment in the company, and with almost never anything good other than some computer-generated imagery. And you mentioned the fact that good old Elon promised that his cars would be equipped with this year. He's an inveterate liar. Almost everything that he says is incorrect. You know, he promised a full automated driving car in 2 years back in 2015. He's still promising it. They're doing that taxi thing. They pushed it back from July to September, and apparently it's only going to be 10 cars in all of Austin. And, you know, he'll be able to cheat that rather easily. I'm sure he'll have remote control cars with guys sitting there driving remotely, and he'll limit it to areas where a little bit of a delay from the remote won't interact too much, and he won't tell anyone that it's remote, the same way that he had the robots who weren't robots, they were puppets, and there were people controlling the puppets and voicing the puppets, and he didn't bother to tell anyone that. Because, again, he's just a con artist. So I don't know. Maybe someday aluminum ion batteries will be revolutionary. Right now, as far as I'm aware, they still have a problem in corrosion. They corrode. So you have to shield them in very special, expensive ways in order for them not to corrode. And that would probably, to me, mean that after the something like 10 years,